Real quick, we have to take a break to acknowledge the sponsor of today's episode, which is Secret Nature. Secret Nature's ultra premium CBD gummies are crafted with real botanicals, nothing extra, and designed to fit right into your day with clean, purposeful functionality. So for me personally, I like to take one of their snoozer gummies in the evening to unwind and ensure that I get a good night's sleep. After a long day, especially when my brain is just still running a mile a minute and I can't seem to settle down, I'll take one to help me slow down, unplug, and actually get a good night's sleep. I personally don't drink alcohol because I just don't like the way it makes me feel the next day, but these gummies feel very clean, intentional, and it never leaves me groggy the next morning, just feeling balanced and rested. Secret Nature's gummies are organic and farm grown. They're never lab made. They're ultra premium CBD gummies made with real botanicals and nothing extra. You've got two purpose built options. There's Bliss for clear focus and productive flow if you want to take one during the day, and then you get Snoozers to help you relax and rest at the end of the day. Each gummy has consistent, measured CBD, so there's never any guessing, just clean, reliable functionality that fits naturally into your schedule. Get 30% off your first order at secretnature.com with the code MAMA. That's M-A-M-A. And just a heads up, their Black Friday sale is coming up, and they are going to be offering 25% off on orders of $75 or more, 35% off on orders of $125 or more, and then 40% off on orders of $150 or more between November 26th and the 30th. So don't forget to use my code MAMA when you check out. That's M-A-M-A at secretnature.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Make another smart choice with AutoQuote Explorer to compare rates from multiple car insurance companies all at once. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance and Affiliates. Not available in all states and situations. Prices may vary on how you buy.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly, and today we are continuing our coverage of the Karen Reed retrial. Yesterday was an eventful day in the trial. Monday, May 12th, the courtroom saw Massachusetts State Police Sergeant Yuri Bukenik return for a third straight day on the witness stand, and tensions ran high as the defense continued its aggressive cross-examination. There were some eye-opening pieces of evidence shown, including a new surveillance video of an ATF agent, Brian Higgins, at the Canton police station in the early hours of the night in question. And there were also a few dramatic moments that left everyone in the courtroom riveted, so let's break down what happened. Yuri Bukenik has been a central figure in this trial as he was one of the lead investigators in the death of Boston police officer John O'Keefe. By Monday, Bukenik had spent 3 full days testifying under oath, and much of his testimony had been under cross-examination by Alan Jackson, who sought to poke holes in the police investigation and also suggest alternative theories of what happened. Bukenik recapped how the investigation unfolded from his perspective. He explained that early on, after viewing John O'Keefe's injuries at the hospital, he began to suspect that he had been hit by a vehicle rather than assaulted with a thrown object like a cocktail glass. Now, this was a shift from an initial theory that a broken cocktail glass found near John O'Keefe might have been involved, a theory that Bukenik had even mentioned to the medical examiner that morning. But seeing abrasions on John O'Keefe's arm and the severe head injury led him to focus on a car impact as the cause. In his words, he said, quote, "My impression shifted from possibly being struck by a glass to him being struck by a vehicle once he saw the wounds firsthand." After that, Buchanek said, quote, "My focus began to concentrate on the defendant." On direct examination previously, Buchanek had detailed steps that he took that morning, interviewing witnesses who were at the house on Fairview Road and examining Karen Reed's SUV once it was impounded. He noted, for example, that John O'Keefe's cell phone was found outside under his body at the scene and that Karen had been heard exclaiming, "Oh my God, did I hit him?" when John was found, both details that raised suspicions for Buchanek. He also testified about finding Karen's SUV's rear taillight broken, with pieces later recovered on the street outside the house, which became a critical piece of evidence. However, Monday's session wasn't just a rehash of prior testimony. It was mostly Alan Jackson's cross-examination and some redirect by the prosecution. The defense zeroed in on what they claim were investigative missteps or oddities in Buchanek's work, trying to suggest that police may have overlooked or even mishandled evidence. Buchanek, for his part, denied seeing any misconduct during the investigation. And when prosecutor Hank Brennan later got a turn to question him on redirect, Brennan asked point blank if Buchanek ever saw anyone tampering with evidence, for instance, removing a piece of broken taillight from Karen's Lexus while it was in police custody. Of course, he said, "No, I did not." He also stood by the integrity of his colleague, saying that he believed Detective Michael Proctor conducted himself with integrity throughout. Now, we talked about this in the last episode as I recapped, because Buchanek had to read aloud the text messages that Michael Proctor sent that group talking about searching for nudes in Karen Reed's phone and also calling her a retard. And I find it telling that every time someone within the police department gets on the stand and they are faced with these uncomfortable questions about the conduct of other officers like Michael Proctor, they absolutely refuse to fall for anything that the defense is trying to get them to do, which is admit that Michael Proctor acted unprofessionally and disgracefully. And when we're talking about a case where the defense believes a cover-up happened because all of these people colluded together to protect their own, aren't these kind of blatant examples of that when you have a detective or a sergeant sitting on the stand refusing to acknowledge that Michael Proctor really fucked this up? And he's having to read text messages between Brian Higgins and Karen Reed, and they're obviously flirtatious because Brian and Karen kind of had this like side thing going on where they kissed and maybe did other things, but we just don't really know the full extent. But there was obviously something there happening on the side. So when you have people within the police department sitting on the stand refusing to acknowledge that there were mistakes made or mishandlings done or whatever, and that there are gross mishandlings, like the stuff that Michael Proctor said is deplorable. So the fact that they're all sitting there and saying, "No, he conducted himself with integrity throughout," it's like, okay, well, you lose your credibility because you refuse to acknowledge that he actually did not have integrity or honor when he was handling this investigation. But that's just my two cents for whatever it's worth. But Buchanek explained some of his investigative decisions that the defense had questioned. For example, he chose to interview key witnesses like the McCabe family and Brian Albert at the McCabe's house instead of at the police station. On redirect, he clarified that this was a deliberate choice. The weather was bad that day because it was snowing, and he felt that these witnesses had been through a traumatic experience finding their friend unresponsive in the snow. Interviewing them in the comfort of their home was meant to help them relax and recall details more easily. In other words, he wasn't trying to give them any special treatment. It was just about practicality and empathy given the circumstances. But one of the most striking moments on Monday came when the defense introduced surveillance video footage that had not been a focus previously in the first trial, security camera clips showing ATF agent Brian Higgins at the Canton Police Department in the early hours of January 29th, around 1:30 a.m. on January 29th. So this is roughly an hour after Karen said that she dropped John O'Keefe off at the Fairview house. Brian Higgins pulled into the Canton Police Station parking lot in his white Jeep Wrangler. The surveillance video, which the jury watched in court, shows a Jeep with a snowplow on the front arriving at the station in the middle of a heavy snowfall. A hooded figure exits the vehicle and walks towards the building, and Buchanek testified that the person in the video appears to be Mr. Brian Higgins, noting the plow on the Jeep and the hooded sweatshirt matching what Higgins was wearing earlier that night at the bar. In one camera angle, you can actually see the individual inside the station hallway, a man in jeans and a hoodie walking through the corridor, and the defense later pointed out that Higgins himself has acknowledged making this late-night stop at the station, so his presence there isn't a dispute, but the purpose of his visit is very much a point of debate. In the footage, Brian Higgins enters an office inside the station around 1:28 a.m. and stays for only about 6 minutes before coming back out. The video then shows him exiting the building with his hood still up. Notably, as he walks back into the snowy parking lot, he appears to be on his cell phone, holding it up right by his right ear or cheek. In fact, multiple clips from different camera angles show what looks like Higgins talking on the phone while he's moving about the parking lot. And this is intriguing because, according to the defense, Higgins previously claimed that he didn't make any phone calls during that time frame between leaving the after party and later being informed that John O'Keefe's body was found. I think he mentioned that it was butt dials. We've heard so much about butt dials. Yet the video seemingly shows him using his phone. So who was he talking to and what were they talking about? Over the next 10 to 15 minutes captured on camera, Brian Higgins can be seen moving vehicles around in the parking lot. First, he gets into another car parked next to his and starts it, presumably to move it out of a snowed-in spot. But then he opens the passenger door of a third vehicle and removes a bag or item and then places it into his own Jeep. He then goes back to that third vehicle a second time and opens the door again as if double-checking or grabbing something else before stepping out of view briefly. At one point, the footage shows Brian Higgins carrying what looks like a shovel or a long snow brush. And finally, after shuffling these vehicles and items around for a short while, Higgins returns to his Jeep, gets in, and drives off. And he leaves the police station at about 1:45 a.m. So he got there at about 1:28, stayed for about 15, 17 minutes, leaving at 1:45 a.m. Now, why is this video important? Alan Jackson highlighted it to raise questions about Brian Higgins' behavior. He essentially asked the jury to consider why would an ATF agent who had been drinking at a party swing by the police station after midnight in a snowstorm instead of just going home like everyone else? And why was he moving cars and making phone calls at 1:30 in the morning? The defense suggested that this is suspicious, perhaps hinting that Brian Higgins had some sort of knowledge of or involvement in the events that led to John O'Keefe's death. Jackson openly speculated that Brian Higgins' late-night trip to the station might not have been the innocent errand that it was made out to be, because if it was so innocent, then why not mention that you were on the phone? Why not detail exactly what it was that you were doing? Because remember, when he was faced with the fact that he made phone calls that night, he disregarded them as just butt dials. But we have video of him having the phone up to his face, clearly having a conversation. Now, to keep it fair, from the prosecution's perspective, this could have an innocent explanation. In fact, Brian Higgins has given an explanation in earlier proceedings for that late night visit. He said that he went to the station to move his government-issued work vehicle out of the way of snow plows. Because it had started snowing, he didn't want to have to wake up early to do it before the plows came through the lot. So in other words, he claimed it was just a quick stop at work to deal with the snowstorm logistics issue and not to secretly meet anyone or tamper with evidence. And indeed, in the video, we do see him shoveling and moving vehicles, which is consistent with that story. But Sergeant Buchanan confirmed on the stand that Brian had acknowledged going into his office at the Canton Police Station after the party and that the person in the video was likely him. So depending on who you ask, this footage is either a smoking gun of suspicious behavior or just nothing, showing a guy being responsible about snow on a stormy night. But the jury watched intently as these clips played, aware that this ties into the defense's broader theme of a potential cover-up or alternate theory of the crime.
The Disney Plus Hulu Max bundle. It's the ultimate bundle for an unbelievable price. Plans starting at $16.99 a month. Get it and watch Marvel Television's Ironheart on Disney Plus.
I want to build something iconic.
A new season of The Bear on Hulu.
We can make people happy.
And the epic, a Minecraft movie on Max.
Anything you can imagine is possible.
The Disney Plus Hulu Max bundle. Plans starting at $16.99 a month. All these and more now streaming. Terms apply. Visit DisneyPlusHuluMaxBundle.com for details.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now, aside from the videos, a lot of drama on Monday came from the back and forth between Alan Jackson and Buchanan during cross-examination. One line of questioning focused on the relationship and communications between Karen Reed and Brian Higgins in the days and weeks before John O'Keefe's death. So I've mentioned before that they kind of had this flirtatious relationship. They did share a kiss while Karen was with John. And if you'll remember last week, Jackson actually had Buchanan read a lot of those texts out loud, one of which being from Karen to Brian Higgins saying, "I'm not a hoe," during their banter. Honestly, their back and forth was so cringy to watch, like the text messages that were exchanged between Karen Reed and Brian Higgins, because they were literally like, "Do you think I'm hot? I think you're hot. And I think you are like a Staten Island girl," or whatever he ended up saying. And that was my like horrible Boston accent. I'm super sorry if that caused you to like really want to turn this episode off. But the messages were so juvenile. It was like, "Do you think I'm hot? Do you like me? Check yes or no." Like, it was just, it's very juvenile. So, it, you know, reading those out in court was somewhat salacious, but relevant, because the defense was painting a picture that Higgins had a crush on Karen and maybe he was a little bit jealous of John O'Keefe. So on Monday, Jackson returned to that theme and basically asked Buchanan, "Didn't it occur to you that Brian Higgins could have a motive like jealousy to harm John O'Keefe?" After all, Jackson pointed out that Higgins had been flirting with Karen for weeks, then saw her walk into the bar with her boyfriend John O'Keefe that night. So that could spark some envy or anger. Alan Jackson even highlighted a specific text that Higgins sent Karen when she arrived at the bar with John O'Keefe, a text that just read, "Well," which Jackson insinuated sounded unhappy or disappointed seeing Karen with her boyfriend. Of course, Buchanan responded that he did not uncover any evidence that Brian Higgins had a motive to murder John O'Keefe. In fact, on redirect, prosecutor Brennan had explicitly asked Buchanan if he had found any motive for Higgins to want to harm or kill John O'Keefe. And Buchanan answered, "No, I did not." Of course, they're going to answer that. But Jackson pressed on in recross, saying that, you know, Brian could have had a motive to at least confront John O'Keefe that night. And Buchanan conceded only so much. He remarked that the text messages speak for themselves. Everyone saw the flirty nature of those exchanges, but he personally didn't conclude that Brian Higgins was driven to violence. And when Alan Jackson pushed just a little bit more, Buchanan finally allowed, you know, there's a possibility there that Brian could have been jealous, but he didn't see it. In other words, sure, it's possible, but I, as an investigator, saw no indication of that happening. Now, this kind of speaks to what I believe personally happened in this case. I know there's so many theories and people think that they know what happened, or, you know, people local to the area have beliefs on what happened. I think that it makes a lot of sense that Brian Higgins might have confronted John O'Keefe, or John O'Keefe confronted Brian Higgins about the little fling that he was having with Karen. And that if a fight broke out, then Colin Albert, who was a hot-headed teenager known for fighting, stepped in and, you know, fought also like a pack mentality, and that maybe during the fight, the dog Chloe also attacked, because dogs are just kind of prone to do that sometimes if they see an altercation. Sometimes I think it entices them to fight as well. So it just makes the most sense to me that something escalated out of control, the dog got involved, and then they were all trying to cover it up to just protect everyone at that house. That honestly makes a lot more sense to me than Karen backing into him, because like I've said previously, the injuries that John sustained do not line up, in my opinion, with being struck by a vehicle. The scratches on the arm, you can't explain that away with being reversed into by a vehicle. Now, another major focus on Monday was an intricacy of the physical evidence, the broken taillight from Karen Reed's Lexus SUV. This taillight, specifically the red plastic lens from the rear passenger side, is alleged to have shattered when Karen struck John O'Keefe. Small fragments were later found on the ground outside of their 34 Fairview Road where the incident occurred, and those fragments are a key piece of evidence implicating Karen's car. The defense, however, has suggested something more sinister, that Detective Michael Proctor might have planted those pieces of taillight at the scene to bolster the case against Karen. It's a serious accusation, essentially claiming that evidence was tampered with by police. And Jackson showed jurors a surveillance video from inside the Canton Police Station's Sallyport, or garage, where Karen's Lexus was taken on the afternoon of January 29th. This video, interestingly, was initially provided in an inverted or mirrored orientation, so the left and right were flipped. In that original footage, it looked like Detective Proctor was standing near the left rear taillight of Karen's SUV, which would have been the driver's side, and perhaps fiddling near that area. But because the video was mirrored, he was actually standing by the right rear taillight, the passenger side, the side that was broken. Alan Jackson capitalized on this, arguing that Proctor's movements in the video, walking around the back of the vehicle and appearing to crouch near one side, were suspicious, possibly indicating that he could have been removing pieces of taillight that were still intact from that right taillight and then later dropping it at the scene to frame Karen. And there was actually a point where Buchanan stood up and showed the jury these broken pieces of taillight that were like 6 inches long. And it definitely begs the question, how did this get missed during the initial investigation? Because if you'll remember, these pieces weren't found until much later. And some people argue that those pieces were covered up by snow and that's why they weren't found. But I mean, these are huge pieces of snow. And if you're telling me that during the search, during the day, these pieces were not found until much later, like 4 or 5 o'clock, I just find that kind of weird and hard to believe. But especially when you consider the fact that there is footage of Karen Reed backing out of her garage the morning that she went to go search for John O'Keefe and bumping into his car with that side of her SUV. I mean, it makes perfect sense that she shattered the taillight as she backed into that vehicle. And we have surveillance footage of it. Like, what a goldmine piece of evidence. You could not have explained that any other way without that video surveillance footage of her backing into that vehicle. That, to me, is why the taillight is broken. That explains why the taillight is broken. And we know that that happened after John O'Keefe was left in the front yard. So I want you to remember that according to the timeline, the Lexus was in police custody before officers ever discovered the red lens fragments in the snow at Fairview Road. 40 some odd pieces of taillight. None of them were found until after her car was already in that Sallyport. And the SUV arrived in the garage around 5:35 p.m. that day. And the crime scene search didn't turn up the broken lens pieces until closer to 8 p.m. that night. So you're telling me people were out there all day from 5 or 6 a.m. all the way to 8 p.m. and they didn't find a single shard of broken taillight until 8 p.m.? Give me a break. Alan Jackson also highlighted an odd lapse in the garage video footage too. The footage had a jump, like a gap of a few seconds, right at the moment that the tow truck pulled in with Karen's SUV. In one frame, the bay is completely empty, and in the next, the Lexus is suddenly parked there with a timestamp jump of about 5 seconds. And Jackson insinuated that this was convenient, almost as if something might have been edited out or missed in those few seconds. Though there's no direct evidence of foul play with the video, it could have just been a camera glitch, which would be a really convenient camera glitch, but all of this was meant to feed the defense narrative that evidence could have been planted to pin the blame on Karen. Because it makes me wonder if the footage of the SUV arriving in the Sallyport showed the taillight still relatively intact, and that's why it was edited out. Now, prosecutor Hank Brennan on redirect tried to debunk the taillight tampering theory. He asked Buchanan, of course, if he ever saw anyone at all, pocket a piece of the Lexus broken taillight or do something fishy while the SUV was in the Sallyport. And Buchanan was adamant that he did not. By the close of court on Monday, May 12th, the trial momentum felt like it could really go either way. The defense had scored some points by raising eyebrows about Brian Higgins and the handling of evidence, and the prosecution had done its best to kind of combat those points. But importantly, the jury saw and heard everything, the surveillance videos, the text messages, the arguments on both sides. For today, Tuesday, May 13th, apparently proceedings have been unexpectedly canceled due to, quote, unavoidable circumstances, as announced by a court spokesperson shortly before they were supposed to start this morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time. No additional details have been provided, and while there's no official word on when the trial will resume, I'm expecting it to pick back up on Wednesday, but I guess we'll see. The next phase will likely involve some new witnesses, possibly including forensic experts or individuals connected to the events at 34 Fairview. If you're enjoying these recaps, please share them with a friend. That would mean so much to me because I'm just going to be real with you right now. I'm trying to grow the audience that we have here at Mama Mystery, and so just by spreading the word, sharing it on your social media or with a friend that might like true crime or is fascinated by this case, It would mean so much to me. Those little steps make such a huge difference. I appreciate them so much. So thank you so much for listening. I'll be back on Wednesday, I guess, since there's not going to be, well, I guess it'll be Thursday because I'll recap whatever happens on Wednesday since there's nothing happening today. But anyway, I hope you all have a great week and thank you so much for listening. Stay curious, stay vigilant. Mama Mystery out. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy to see if you could save when you bundle your home and auto policies. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.